Hey, David here. Welcome back to Manifesting Miracles Week, the five-part series where I dive deep into A Course in Miracles. Hard to believe this is already the last show in the series. I hope you found it both inspirational and thought-provoking. This text has meant so much to my own growth that I truly hope it can be the same for you. Again, if you missed any shows in the series, I'd encourage you to go back and give them a listen several times over. Integration happens through repetition. And with material as life-changing as this, you can never hear it enough. On today's final episode, I'm finishing strong with a few more sections from The Separation and the Atonement, covering the sections titled Fear and Conflict, Cause and Effect, and the Meaning of the Last Judgment. The perfect way to close out the series, if you ask me. Here we go. Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast. So now we're talking about fear and conflict from A Course in Miracles. Being afraid seems to be involuntary. You know, people tell me this all the time. Like, how can I get rid of, how can I make the fear go away before I do something? Let's go through this and really see what it is that we're really focused on here. Being afraid seems to be involuntary, something beyond your control. Yet I have said already that only constructive acts should be involuntary. My control can take over everything that does not matter, while my guidance can direct everything that does if you choose. Fear cannot be controlled by me, but it can be self-controlled. Fear prevents me from giving you my control, my being the spirit, okay? The presence of fear shows that you have raised the body thoughts to the level of the mind. Now think about that for a moment. When you experience fear, you experience it in the body. When you experience worry, you experience it in the mind. That is a thought. This removes them from any control and makes you feel personally responsible for them. This is an obvious confusion of levels. I do not foster level confusion, but you must choose to correct it. You would not excuse insane behavior on your part by saying you could not help it. Why should you condone insane thinking? There is a confusion here that you would do well to look at clearly. You may believe that you are responsible for what you do, but not for what you think. The truth is that you're responsible for what you think, because it is at this level that you exercise choice. And really, choice is your greatest power. What you do comes from what you think. You cannot separate yourself from the truth by giving autonomy to behavior. This is controlled by me automatically as soon as you place what you think under my guidance. Whenever you are afraid, it is a sure sign that you have allowed your mind to miscreate and have not allowed me to guide it. It is pointless to believe that controlling the outcome of misthought can result in healing. When you are fearful, you have chosen wrongly. That is why you feel responsible for it. You must change your mind, not your behavior, and this is a matter of willingness. You do not need guidance except at the mind level. Correction belongs only at the level where change is possible. Change does not mean anything at the symptom level where it cannot work. The correction of fear is your responsibility. When you ask for release from fear, you are implying that it is not. You should ask instead for help in the conditions that have brought the fear about. These conditions always entail a willingness to be separate. At that level, you can help it. You are much too tolerant of mind wandering and are passively condoning your mind's miscreations. The particular result does not matter, but the fundamental error does. The correction is always the same. Before you choose to do anything, ask me if your choice is in accord with mine. If you are sure that it is, there will be no fear. Fear is always the sign of strain, arising whenever what you want conflicts with what you do. This situation arises in two ways. First, you can choose to do conflicting things, either simultaneously or successively. This produces conflicted behavior, which is intolerable to you because the part of the mind that wants to do something else is outraged. Second, you can behave as you think you should, but without entirely wanting to do so. This produces consistent behavior, but entails great strain. In both cases, the mind and the behavior are out of accord, resulting in a situation in which you are doing what you do not wholly want to do. This arouses a sense of coercion that usually produces rage, and projection is likely to follow. Whenever there is fear, it is because you have not made up your mind. Your mind is therefore split, and your behavior inevitably becomes erratic. Correcting at the behavioral level can shift the error from the first to the second type, but it will not obliterate the fear. It is possible to reach a state in which you bring your mind under my guidance without conscious effort, but this implies a willingness that you have not developed as yet. The Holy Spirit cannot ask more than you are willing to do. The strength to do comes from your undivided decision. There is no strain in doing God's will as soon as you recognize that it is also your own. Now let me say that again. There is no strain in doing God's will as soon as you recognize that it is also your own. It's one and the same. The lesson here is quite simple, but particularly apt to be overlooked. I will therefore repeat it, urging you to listen. Only your mind can produce fear. It does so whenever it is conflicted in what it wants, producing inevitable strain because wanting and doing are discordant. This can be corrected only by accepting a unified goal. The first corrective step is undoing the error and is to know first that the conflict is an expression of fear. So say to yourself that you must somehow have chosen not to love, or the fear could not have arisen. The whole process of correction becomes nothing more than a series of pragmatic steps in the larger process of accepting the atonement as the remedy. These steps may be summarized in this way. Know first that this is fear. Fear arises from lack of love. The only remedy for lack of love is perfect love. Perfect love is the atonement. I have emphasized that the miracle or the expression of atonement is always a sign of respect from the worthy to the worthy. The recognition of this worth is reestablished by the atonement. It is obvious then that when you are afraid, you have placed yourself in a position where you need atonement. You have done something loveless, have chosen without love. This is precisely the situation for which an atonement was offered. The need for the remedy inspired its establishment. As long as you recognize only the need for the remedy, you will remain fearful. However, as soon as you accept the remedy, you have abolished fear. This is how true healing occurs. Everyone experiences fear, yet it would take very little right thinking to realize why fear occurs. Few appreciate the real power of the mind, and no one remains fully aware of it all of the time. However, if you hope to spare yourself from fear, there are some things you must realize and realize fully. The mind is very powerful and never loses its creative force. It never sleeps. Every instant, it is creating. it is hard to recognize that thought and belief combine into a power surge that can literally move mountains. It appears at first glance that to believe such power about yourself is arrogant, but that it is not the real reason you do not believe it. You prefer to believe that your thoughts cannot exert real influence because you're actually afraid of them. This may ally awareness of the guilt, but at the cost of perceiving the mind as impotent. If you believe what you think is ineffectual, you may cease to be afraid of it, but you are hardly likely to respect it. There are no idle thoughts. All thinking produces form at some level. So now we get into cause and effect. You may still complain about fear, but you nevertheless persist in making yourself fearful. I've already indicated that you cannot ask me to release you from fear. I know it does not exist, but you do not know that. If I intervened between your thoughts and their results, I would be tampering with a basic law of cause and effect, the most fundamental law there is. I would hardly help you if I depreciated the power of your own thinking. This would be in direct opposition to the purpose of this course. It is much more helpful to remind you that you do not guard your thoughts carefully enough. You may feel at this point it would take a miracle to enable you to do this, which is perfectly true. You are not used to miracle-minded thinking, but you can be trained to think that way. All miracle workers need that kind of training. I cannot let you leave your mind unguarded, or you will not be able to help me. Miracle working entails a full realization of the power of thought in order to avoid miscreation. Otherwise, a miracle will be necessary to set the mind itself straight. A circular process that would not foster the time collapse for which the miracle was intended. Whenever I do something with A Course in Miracles where I'm reading it, teaching it, talking about it with other people, there's three things I want people to see out of it. The power of who you really are. It's astounding when you really begin to understand who you are, what you are, where you came from. The other thing is that your past is not your future. Your past is your past, and it's to be forgiven and let go of. The third thing is to really see that you were made to be an authentic person. That means not behaving or acting like anybody else wants you to be, but to be your true self. Now, here's what's important about that. If you're being your true self, at some point you might find out you're being a jerk. But the great thing is that when you realize that you're being a jerk, or you're being self-abusive, or you're abusing other people, or maybe you're not being honest, or you're wearing a mask to go through the world, when you realize that, the impetus for the change becomes apparent for yourself. And it becomes easier because you're kind of like, oh, hell, look at how I'm showing up. Like, this is totally not who I really am. And you let the facade go, right? So the ego exaggeration begins to go and the true self begins to come to the surface. The Course in Miracles is like any really great text. It's something that you never get out of completely. I may go months without picking it up and reading it. And then I'll get in it and I'll be in it for a week or a month or whatever. And I'll just stick with something. I find that, and here's an emergency. Here's like the emergency problem solver. You have a problem in your life. You don't know how to find an answer. You're looking for some direction. Pick that book up, open it to whatever page it opens to, close your eyes, point your finger out, and set it down on the page, and then read what it says. Like 99% of the time, it'll lead you right to the answer you were looking for. You may not always like it, but it'll lead you to the answer. The miracle worker must have genuine respect for true cause and effect, as it is a necessary condition for the miracle to occur. Both miracles and fear come from thoughts. If you're not free to choose one, you would also not be free to choose the other. By choosing the miracle, you have rejected fear, if only temporarily. You have been fearful of everyone and everything. You're afraid of God, of me, and of yourself. You have misperceived or miscreated us and believe in what you have actually made in your life. You would not have done this if you were not afraid of your own thoughts. The fearful must miscreate because they misperceive creation. When you miscreate, you're in pain. The cause and the effect principle now become a real expediter, only temporarily. Actually, cause is a term properly belonging to God and his effect in his Son. This entails a set of cause and effect relationship totally different from those that you introduce into miscreation. Now, the fundamental conflict in the world then is between creation and miscreation. So that is the truth and the lie that we experience in our life. All fear is implicit in the second and all love in the first. The conflict is therefore one between love and fear. It has already been said that you believe you cannot control fear because you yourself made it, and your belief in it seems to render it out of your control. Yet, any attempt to resolve the error through attempting the mastery of fear is useless. In fact, as it asserts the power of fear by the very assumption that it need be mastered. The true resolution rests entirely on mastery through love. In the interim, however, the sense of conflict is inevitable since you have placed yourself in a position where you believe in the power of what does not exist, and that is the illusion that you continue to create. Nothing and everything cannot coexist. To believe in one is to deny the other. Fear is really nothing, and love is everything. Whenever light enters darkness, the darkness is abolished. What you believe is true for you, what do you believe is true for you? In this sense, the separation has occurred. And to deny it is merely to use denial inappropriately. However, to concentrate on error is only a further error. The initial corrective procedure is to recognize temporarily that there is a problem, but only as an indication that immediate correction is needed. This establishes a state of mind in which the atonement can be accepted without delay. It should be emphasized, however, that ultimately no compromise is possible between everything and nothing. Time is essentially a device by which all compromise in this respect can be given up. It only seems to be abolished by degrees, because time itself involves intervals that really do not exist. Miscreation made this necessary as a corrective device. The statement, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believe in him should not perish but have everlasting life," needs only one slight correction to the meaning in its context. He gave it to his only begotten Son. It should especially be noted that God has only one Son. If all his creations are his sons, everyone must be an integral part of the whole sonship. The sonship in its oneness transcends the sum of its parts. Now think, however this is obscured as long as any of its parts are missing. That is why the conflict cannot ultimately be resolved until all the parts of the sonship have returned. Only then can the meaning of wholeness in the true sense be understood. Any part of the sonship can believe in error or incompleteness if he chooses to do so. However, if he does so, he is believing in the existence of nothingness. The correction of this error is the atonement. Now, when I talk to you about success being easy, in order for it to be easy, that means that there has to be the acceptance of love. How so? The acceptance that you deserve success, that it is not something that you have to struggle or be in pain in order to get. In the next part here, he says, I have already briefly spoken about readiness, but at some additional points might be helpful here. Readiness is only the prerequisite for accomplishment. The two should not be confused. As soon as a state of readiness occurs, there is usually some degree of desire to accomplish, okay? So desire, as we have talked about it many times over, okay, is always there as the readiness occurs. That's very important to know, because even if there's a conflict in the mind, if the desire is there, the readiness is there. He says, as soon as a state of readiness occurs, there is usually some degree of desire to accomplish, but it is by no means necessarily undivided. The state does not imply more than a potential for a change of mind. Confidence cannot develop fully until mastery has been accomplished. We have already attempted to correct the fundamental error that fear can be mastered, and have emphasized that the only real mastery is through what? It's through love. It's the only way. Readiness is only the beginning of confidence. You may think this implies that an enormous amount of time is necessary between readiness and mastery, but let me remind you that time and space are under my control. One of the ways in which you can correct the magic miracle of confusion is to remember that you did not create yourself. You are apt to forget this when you become egocentric, and this puts you in the position where the belief in magic is virtually inevitable. Your will to create was given to you by your creator. That means your will, your desire, your purpose. Who was expressing the same will in his creation? Since creative ability rests in the mind, everything that you create is necessarily a matter of will. It also follows that whatever you alone make is real in your own sight, through not in the mind of God. This basic distinction leads directly into the real meaning of the Last Judgment. The Last Judgment is one of the most threatening ideas in your thinking. This is because you do not understand it. Judgment is not an attribute of God. It was brought into being only after the separation, when it became one of the many learning devices to be built into the overall plan. Just as the separation occurred over millions of years, the Last Judgment will extend over a similarly long period, and perhaps even a longer one. Its length can, however, be greatly shortened by miracles, the device for shortening but not abolishing time. If a sufficient number become truly miracle-minded, this shortening process can be virtually immeasurable. It is essential, however, that you free yourself from fear quickly, because you must emerge from the conflict if you're going to bring peace to other minds. The Last Judgment is generally thought of as a procedure undertaken by God. Actually, it will be undertaken by my brothers with my help. It is a final healing rather than a meting out of punishment. However, much of you may think that punishment is deserved. Punishment is a concept totally opposed to right-mindedness, and the aim of the Last Judgment is to restore right-mindedness to you. The Last Judgment may be called in a process of right evaluation. It simply means that everyone will finally come to understand what is worthy and what is not. After this, the ability to choose can be directed rationally. Until this distinction is made, however, the vacillations between free and imprisoned will cannot but continue. The first step toward freedom involves a sorting out of the false from the true. This is the process of separation in the constructive sense and reflects the true meaning of the apocalypse. Everyone will ultimately look upon his own creations and choose to preserve only what is good, just as God himself looked upon what he had created and knew that it was good. At this point, the mind can begin to look with love on its own creations because of their worthiness. At the same time, the mind will inevitably disown its miscreations, which, without belief, will no longer exist. The term last judgment is frightening, not only because it has been projected onto God, but also because of the association of the last with the idea of death. This is an outstanding example of upside-down perception. If the meaning of the last judgment is objectively examined, it is quite apparent that it is really the doorway to life. No one who lives in fear is really alive. Your own last judgment cannot be directed toward yourself because you are not your own creation. You can, however, apply it meaningfully and at any time to everything that you have made and retain in your memory only what is creative and good. This is what your right-mindedness cannot but dictate. The purpose of time is solely to give you time to achieve this judgment. It is your own perfect judgment of your own perfect creations. When everything that you retain is lovable, there is no reason for fear to remain with you. This is the only part of your atonement. So if you're going to really see yourself as going from good to great, really seeing yourself as the power of God, the real idea, the real focus is that you have to see everything that you possibly can, and yes, you have to work on this, right, from the idea of love and not judgment. When you can see things truly from a place of love, you can be in a place of creation. When you see things from a place of fear, you're in a place of miscreation.
Thank you for taking part in Manifesting Miracles Week here on the Successful Mind Podcast. I hope it was as impactful to you as A Course in Miracles was to me. To keep this conversation going, I'd love to hear how the material has affected your life and business. To share your own miracles, I'd love for you to send me a direct message to my Instagram at David_P_Nagel. That's at David_P_Nagel. Again, it has been an absolute pleasure bringing this study to you, and I look forward to many more miracles in your future. See you soon.
Listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.